When you really think about it, it's really quite interesting when you look at how our belief system as sales professionals can make or break our results. In this week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast, we're going to go there. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 50,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. This week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast is brought to you by our upcoming 2022 sales program. I'm going to be talking all about it at the end of the podcast. If you'd like to have a little look-see right now, if you happen to be a little impatient like I am, please visit yoursalesplaybook.com/get-started. So let's get right down to business in my true New York fashion. You know, you guys, if you've listened to me before, you know I don't like a lot of fluff in some of these podcasts where if you ever listen to some of these podcasts and you're going on 8 to 10 minutes and they're still talking about what they're going to be talking about, I really don't like to roll that way. So I want to get down to business. So today we're really going to be talking about your belief system as a sales professional. Now listen, I think we got to get something out in the open. If you're like me and you hear somebody who wants to talk about our belief system, you're sensing a rah-rah session, right? I mean, that's what I do. Like, I give an eye roll. I'm like, all right, here we go again. You got to believe in yourself and all that kind of stuff. Well, I promise you, I'm going to take this down a little bit of a different road today. So if you'll bear with me, maybe we do like a little pinky promise that I'm going to do this and you're going to bear with me. Promise you, I'm going to take you down a different road. So at the core of the methodology that I teach sales reps, it's really, there are three components, and I call it the Accelerated Performance Framework. And there's three parts to it. Today, we're obviously only going to focus on one, and it's going to be getting into kind of your belief system. But that falls under the very first component in the Accelerated Performance Framework, and that's your mindset. The second component, just for the hell of it, I want to give you the other two. It's the information that you're exposing yourself to get better at your craft or better at whatever it is you want to accelerate your performance in. And then last but not least, I think is a really important component, is taking action. So you got mindset, you got information, and you have action. Now, under this category of mindset really falls this whole concept of your belief system, right? And, you know, I want to get into a few things just to get you thinking today. That's all I want to do. And not only get you thinking, perhaps get you to the point where you start challenging some of your sales beliefs, right? Some of this, like, beliefs you have that might be limiting you in terms of your performance, in terms of your results, in terms of, I don't know, let's get a little shallow, shall we? How about the money that you're making? All right, so there are all different kinds of beliefs that sales reps have out there. And believe me when I tell you, having trained over 50,000 sales reps, I've heard a lot of them. So I'm not going to give you all of them, but I'm going to throw some out there because, I don't know, I might be talking about you today. So one of the beliefs I encounter that I think is a limiting belief, that it's better to attract business than hunt for business. And not to sit here and point fingers or belittle certain people that are out there, but a lot of this is coming from the social selling crowd. I love social selling, just to be clear. I was kind of social selling before social selling was cool. In fact, one of my dear friends in that space actually coined the phrase of the thing everybody was focusing on before everybody changed the label to social selling. And the gentleman's name is Nigel Edelstein. And he coined the phrase sales 2.0. And I was all over that. In fact, just as a little side story, I actually almost got fired, pardon me, from my last position, because I was all into this idea that the new battlefront is not going to be just on the phone or, you know, knocking on doors. I could see back in 2007 that this battlefront was going to include LinkedIn and blogging and personal branding and emails and things like that. So I am definitely pro social selling. But what the problem I have is how a lot of them, a lot of the people preaching it, are preaching this concept almost that you put things out there, you put content out there, and you sort of wait for the world to beat a path to your door. Now, I'm here to tell you, if you choose that path, I want you to be prepared to have very skinny children. Seriously, you will starve that way. Yeah, would I rather have you guys come to me than me cold call you or email you or approach you? Hell yeah. But I'm here to tell you, I've built a really strong brand. And yes, I get a good amount of leads from things like this podcast and all the blogging that I've been doing, but I've been doing it forever. So, I mean, I've become kind of a fixture for a lot of salespeople. But if I were to just rely on that, man, I'm telling you, I would starve. So I think that's one of the many beliefs, right? But also, too, let's keep going here. The belief that nobody wants phone calls, right? I mean, seriously, there are people out there, and I'm not here to make fun of you, that believe that nobody wants phone calls. Or how about the belief that nobody, this one just absolutely blows my mind. Nobody checks their voicemail. Nobody checks their voicemail. I want you to really think about this for a minute. I want you to think about people who have decision-making responsibility, who choose not to. I mean, if this were true, then they're not checking their voicemail. So that means that there are no important messages that could be in there for them, and it's stupid for them to check it. See, that's, I'm sorry, but that's kind of a crazy belief right there. Also, there are people out there, their beliefs come in different flavors or they're packaged different ways. For example, you might find yourself making statements like, I prefer networking. You know, here's what I need to tell you. And if you haven't listened to my podcast before, I wanna brace you because I'm about to be a little direct with you. Nobody gives a shit what you think. Seriously, I do. We're buddies here. We're hanging out, okay? I don't want you to be mad at me. You and I are good. But do you really think that your customers and your potential customers are sitting around wondering what you prefer in order for them to decide where they're going to show up? No, they show up where they want to. So if you find yourself making statements like, I prefer networking, I've heard people say before the pandemic, I prefer to drop in. Great, nobody gives a shit what you prefer. Right? But now there's also another flavor of this. You know what it is? And this all has to do with the belief system. You have people out there, I don't get it, they'll say, right? One of the things they might say is, well, you know, I don't get Twitter. I don't get LinkedIn. I don't get Facebook. I don't get Instagram. In other words, like I don't understand how people could think that's valuable. Once again, forgive me. I'm going to get a little brutal, but who really gives a shit what you get? Do you think this is about you? It never was about you. That is a limiting belief. And that's the point today. It's not to make you feel bad. It's to wake you up. Because the thing with beliefs, and I speak from a place where, you know, this was me that I've had limiting beliefs. And then, you know, it was about 11 years ago that I started challenging a lot of the beliefs that I had. And I want to be clear, when I'm talking about challenging your beliefs, see, the word belief can be rather strong. You might also think for a moment that maybe I'm going down the religious road or the political road for you or whatever. Hey, if you want to go that road, go ahead. That's not really what I'm doing today. So I want you to, if at all you're feeling uncomfortable now, I want you to understand the word itself has deep emotional ties to each and every one of us, our beliefs. You know, what do you believe in as far as politics? What do you believe in as far as relationships? I'm not talking about that today. What I'm talking about are the beliefs that limit you as a sales professional. So again, if you're feeling a little uncomfortable, I think it's kind of good that you feel uncomfortable. But remember, today, we're talking about sales. We're not talking about all the other things that we could be talking about when it comes to, you know, each one of our belief systems, okay? So I just want to make sure we're good. But continuing right along, this is, I got one for you. How about your belief about holiday weeks? Or is it a little too soon? Is it too soon for us to have this conversation, being that it's a holiday week here in the U.S.? There are many of you that feel that it's perfectly okay to trash 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, by just saying they will be admin days. I'm going to get caught up on, you know, my CRM, and I'm going to do my expenses and shit like that. I think you're trashing 3 days. Honestly, I mean, it's better than doing nothing, but that's all you can think of doing? Those 3 days. Or there's some people that think, you know, I work hard, and you do work hard. And you know what? I'm going to veg out Monday through Wednesday. Yeah, on top of the other 2 days that you're going to be off, you have trashed an entire week. Now, I want to be clear, because I've had this rant before. I'm not saying that you shouldn't take a day off or a week off or whatever. I'm saying make a decision. And your belief that you're just going to kind of wander around the office and kind of dick around, and you're going to, you know, putz around with administrative things and the TPS reports and all that kind of thing, I just think it's a poor use of that time. So, you know, that's something to think about. But let me just throw another one at you. How about the belief that sales isn't a 9-to-5 job? Now, many of you believe that sales isn't a 9-to-5 job, and you'll be very quick to reference that quote whenever you want to cut out early, right? Whenever the kid has a soccer game. Hell, I've been right in there with you, right? Sales isn't a 9-to-5, man. I'm going to go hang out with my daughter or whatever. Or you know what? A few years back, when, you know, she was still in grade school, sales wasn't a 9-to-5 job, man. I'd start a little late. I'd walk her to school every time I was at home, because I knew that time I was going to blink and she was going to be, next thing you know, a grown woman, which she is now, 23 years old. So I get it. But see, we're real quick to reference the quote when it serves us. But what about the other side of it, right? Sales isn't a 9-to-5 job, man. When we got to put in a little extra time, ladies and gentlemen, maybe we're behind the gun. Maybe we have to put in a little extra time, God forbid, during the week, or get up a little earlier, or work a little later, or make that one extra call or whatever. Or perhaps, God forbid, put in a little bit of time on the weekend, right? So that belief might be limiting us. How about this one? Getting back almost to that holiday week mentality, there are a ton of salespeople, and I hate to confess this because this has been one of my biggest pet peeves. Now you can say, aha, now I get it. Now I know why Castain is such a prick about this stuff. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there who feel, well, Fridays are better as a planning and administrative day. Well, you know, I was definitely one of those people a while ago, until I realized that, in fact, let me just tell you one of the things that I realized. By having Friday as just a planning and administrative day, well, let's all congratulate ourselves, because we lost 50 days. I don't know about you, but right about now, I would love to have 50 extra days right now. Coming up on year end and just, you know, want to outdo my performance from the year before. And many of you might be thinking, well, that's easy to do, man. A lot of people had shitty performance back in 2020. I actually had my best year ever, because I want you to realize that when the pandemic hit, a lot of training, yes, went on hold. But I had an online platform that I've been using since 2012, and a lot of the other guys didn't. They were just mostly live training and keynote speeches and all. I saw the benefit of the online training back, you know, 8 years before the pandemic hit. So I actually had my best year ever. So I still want to outdo that performance or whatever. But how about this? How about that belief that it's okay to knock off half a day every Friday? Doesn't seem like much until you add it up. Again, congratulations. We just lost 25 days at the end of the year because of that belief. How about don't call prospects? Like the belief that you shouldn't call prospects before lunchtime on Monday, right? I can't make this shit up. I'm telling you, this is a belief. And again, I was right in there with you. So in case you think that I'm being nasty and cruel and everything else, man, I have been reformed for years. But as usual, you guys can't outdumb me when it comes to dumb mistakes. I made this mistake also, that I was like, yeah, nobody really wants a call. They're, you know, they're fluffing off the weekend and all that kind of stuff. Well, guess what? If you believe that you shouldn't call prospects and customers before lunchtime on Monday, add that up. That's about 150 hours a year, which is the equivalent. I mean, you're 10 hours shy of trashing a complete month. That's no good, right? How about this one? Here's another one for you. And this is one I've talked about for a while, that the belief that you should always look for the pain in sales. I fell into this category too. And you see, this one is a half truth, right? Yes, we should look for the pain. But anybody who tells you that pain is always present is full of shit. Seriously, they are. Pain is not always present. And that belief will have you walking away with a whole lot of nothing. That's why, yes, in addition to pain, you gotta be looking for things that would represent an opportunity. Now, opportunity isn't always gonna be painful. Sometimes people are doing well, but they could do phenomenal. See, there's no pain there. And if you're not looking for that and getting your prospect on board, that belief is costing you money. Next, here's, oh man, this one has me written all over this, and this was the bulk of my career. You ready for this? This is like the confessional time. That a lot of people have this belief that feedback from the boss is the equivalent of the boss breaking your balls, that the boss is being cruel or whatever. Yes, absolutely. There are a lot of quote-unquote leaders out there and sales managers out there that need a little help in the packaging department. They might be just talking to you like you're an asshole, okay? I'll give you that. But if we could just take that out of the equation, the packaging of the lesson, and just put on that humble student cap that we always talk about here and seek the lesson, I'm telling you that until we get to that point, that belief is costing us money. And for many years, I took feedback from anyone as, you know, a personal attack. That belief cost me money. You know why? Because my damn ego got in the way of the lesson. And that's what you and I have to be seeking as this humble student, or having that humble student mindset. We have to be seeking the lesson, because that's where the money is. The lesson, it's not necessarily if we did it right or wrong. In fact, I remember hearing this thing years ago, and you know, it was kind of put out there in a way that wasn't probably grammatically correct, let alone very eloquent. And it was something like this: in every situation in life, you have the yes, meaning things went, you know, as good if not better than you hoped. You have the no, okay, you got rejected, or maybe it didn't go as well. But the most important part is not in the yes, not in the no. It's the lesson that we have chosen to take from that situation. And I say chosen because it truly is our choice, ladies and gentlemen. What are we going to choose to do with feedback? Are we choosing to make it a personal attack? Are we choosing to get butthurt about this? Are we choosing to let our ego get in the way? Are we choosing to get down to business and learn from it and take that lesson? Okay, so that's something else that can get in the way for it. I got another one for you, a belief system, I think, that costs us money in sales. And this is all over the place, this one. A lot of people out there suffering from this one. A lot of people feel funny about asking for referrals. But here's what cracks me up. The same people, most of them anyway, who feel funny asking for referrals think it's perfectly okay to cold call a stranger. And that one I just can't understand for the life of me. It's perfectly okay to interrupt the stranger, run the risk of them telling you, especially where I live in New York, to F off. But no, don't go to the people that love you and buy from you and that you've bailed out. Don't go to them. Just go to complete strangers, right? I just don't understand that. Or, you know, along the lines of referrals, a belief system that I disagree with, and I'm going to explain why in a minute, you should only ask for referrals once you earn it. I think that's a bullshit belief. I honestly do. I'm sorry if you think less of me. I think that's a bullshit belief. And I'm guilty of that one too. You know why I think that's a bullshit belief? Because I think it leaves money on the table elsewhere. I can honestly tell you that now for 24 years, I have gone a different way with that thinking. I used to believe that, well, once you've earned it, first of all, what the hell, you know, constitutes earning it, right? Quote unquote, earning it. Like what happens? I mean, do we have to have an epiphany here in order for you to have truly earned the referral? Is there a great council of elders that meets and says, I think Paul Castain has earned it? You know, and you're like, what the F? I mean, I don't get it, right? So let me tell you my belief with it and why I believe it. So the story I've told a million times here on this podcast, I just told it on the webinar that we did last week. The 10 new acquisition strategy, new account acquisition tactics webinar that we did back on the 24th of November. So years ago, I met the number one sales rep in the company. Now, the story I always tell, forgive me, here we go again, right? I'm like that old relative that keeps telling you the same stories over and over and over again. Now, what had happened was that year, it was my first year on the job. There's 375 sales reps internationally. I had goals set for the next 3 to 4 years or whatever. My first year, I wanted to land in the top 20. Now, before I met this sales rep at an international convention that we had, I was ranked about 60th. Worldwide out of 375 sales reps. I meet this guy. Now, this is like a little side lesson before we get into his belief about referrals and how it really just changed my whole trajectory as a sales professional. But the thing that I want to say about belief, that it's funny because I'm hanging out and I'm having a couple of beers with the guys and the different sales teams and stuff. And people pointed to this guy shooting pool. And it was kind of like, can you believe that's our number one sales rep? Like almost like you have to have this certain appearance, right? I don't know, like you have to be perfectly physically fit and wear $1 million, you know, suits and you know, drive only the best car. I don't know. I don't like what the hell does the number one sales rep look like? So there was a lot of that starting to go on. And I said, well, you know, it was kind of like, hold my beer, that kind of moment. And I said, and they're like, where are you going? I'm going to buy him a beer. And I want to find out what makes this guy. Tick. I've got, and you know, the looks that I got from my peers for doing that were almost like it was sacrilege. And I think it's interesting how our egos, especially in sales, get in the way. We have the biggest egos on the planet. Part of it protects us. Part of it also keeps us, you know, from getting that damn lesson that I always talk about. And we equate, because of the belief system, that asking someone for help or advice is the equivalent of saying, yeah, hi, I'm Paul Castain, and I suck at my job, and, you know, I'm here to, like, kiss your ass and bow down to you, and you're great, and I'm, oh, and did I mention I suck, and I'm lame, and, you know, heaven forbid I'm asking you for advice. That means I must really suck, and I'm lame, if I haven't said that enough. It's just, it's idiotic, these things that we put on ourselves. So I go over to the guy. I had the balls to go over to him. Nobody had been going over to this guy. I cannot imagine that. It wasn't like the guy smelled and take a shower or some shit. I really don't get it. Right? I don't know. So, oh, and that's the other thing too. The belief that sometimes when you go to somebody for help that they're going to be a dick to you. That they're going to be all pompous because they're number one. Like, get away from it. Yeah, some people are a dick. Get over it. You know, you get rejected every day in this job. You know, like, that's going to be the thing that takes you out? Come on, right? Come on, man. But anyway, so I go over and I said, I just got to ask you, man. You nailed number one 2 years in a row. What's the secret sauce? He told me it's that he asks for referrals from everyone. And I go, oh, so everyone that becomes a client? He's like, no, everyone. I go, what do you mean? He goes, I'm meeting like with the potential client. I've never done business with them. I ask him for a referral. What's the worst thing they can say to me, right? The worst thing they could say to you is no, or piss off, or whatever. Now, I started doing this back in 1997. And I'm here to tell you, and I never, you guys get sick of hearing this, but I ain't tired of saying this at all. But my goal was to land in the top 20 my first year on the job. A lot of people thought I was crazy the first year to put that on myself. I became 12th worldwide out of 375 sales reps. So I nailed it as a result of this guy's advice. Now, I never went any further than number 12. Oh, here it comes, the confession. This guy really sucks. He failed. No, I was actually promoted to run a region and I have 150 people reporting to me. Not too damn bad, right? So it worked. Now, I've been utilizing this approach now for 24 years, I guess it is, right? And I've never had anybody get nasty with me like, how dare you ask me for a referral and we're not doing business. And I promise you, the day somebody does that, they will need therapy when I'm done with them. I don't give a shit if they're a potential client or not. Because, I mean, I think they need their meds if they're going to get flipped out and all bent out of shape and butt hurt. Because somebody with all the trouble in the world right now, this is going to do it. This is what's going to trigger you. So I have no patience for that. But I'm here to tell you, I'd rather take the risk and ask someone, and I'm here to tell you, man, I've been doing it for 24 years, and I've, for the most part, I've done nothing but make money from doing it. So I really wish I was calculating how much extra money I've made by just simply asking for those referrals. So that's a belief system thing, right? You know, I also think there's a lot of you that think that the best thing you can do in your team meetings and your sales meetings that you have amongst yourselves is kind of keep your head down and you know, keep quiet and everything. But you know, that belief is keeping your music in your head, man. You've got ideas, I'm sure you do, and sometimes you just got to have balls and put it out there. Now, I'm not saying, you know, your idea is, you know, to get your boss's job and you say that in a meeting. That'd be kind of crazy, right? I'm not talking about that, but, you know, if you have ideas, you should be sharing it. And I'm here to tell you that the average salesperson will respect you for doing that. Most people are just really afraid of any kind of public speaking. They really are. Most people are. And, you know, any kind of thing where you're speaking up in front of your peers, especially our salespeople, we can be brutal. But I'm here to tell you, most people will admire you because they don't have the balls to speak up. So, you know, that belief might be costing you a promotion, or it might be costing you the confidence that once you do it and you see that, wow, that wasn't so bad, right? But I want to give you some other ones. I don't know. You might be inclined to label these warm and fuzzy. I hope you don't. But these are some more generic ones. There are some of you right now who feel you might be too old. Too old for whatever, right? Well, I'm too old to go for that promotion, or too old to go back to school, too old to start a business or whatever it is. I also want to tell you the oldest person to ever reach the summit of Mount Everest was 80 years old. Do you still think that you're too old to do whatever it is that you're doing? I don't know about you, but falling off a 36,000, you know, foot mountain scares the shit out of me. It just does. I gotta say it, okay? Some of you think that you're too young for whatever. I'm here to tell you that Sir Richard Branson was 16 years old when he started his first business, a little something called Student Magazine. 16 years old. There are some of you listening right now, and I think this is a big one, that you know, your belief is that, well, I never finished college, or I dropped out of college, or I never went to college. You're in good company. People like Oprah Winfrey, Walt Disney, Katy Perry, Rachel Ray, they never finished college. Some of them didn't even go to college. Also, too, you look at Michael Dell. How about Zuckerberg? How about Bill Gates? I mean, we can keep going and going and going. And I'll never forget what Tony Robbins said years ago, kind of along those lines. And it was something that meant a lot to me because I hadn't finished college at that point. And he said, you could always get a PhD in results. I'm wondering if some of you listening to me right now are sitting up a little taller in your seat saying, holy shit, man, he's talking about, I got a PhD in results, man. I didn't need to go to college for that. You know, I got a PhD in results. Now, some of you, and this one hits home with me because I've been there, man. You've been beaten up a little. You've had some rejection, right? And it's a very dangerous place because you start questioning yourself. Maybe you've had a bad spell in sales, man, a little bit of a rut. And you're just questioning, you know, can I do this or whatever? Or do I suck? Or, you know, maybe I'm not worthy of the success I seek. Well, first of all, I want to tell you, cut that shit out. You are worthy. You are 1,000% worthy. You know, our worthiness for things in life is not determined by the fact that maybe we didn't hit the mark once, twice, 500 times for all I give a shit. But I also want to tell you, you're in good company. Because when it comes to rejection and failure, look at Henry Ford, by the way. He failed not only five times, but he went broke several times. But it's interesting because history doesn't tend to remember those things. History remembers the fact that this guy kind of, you know, invented the modern assembly line and the Model T or whatever the hell it was, right? And they really don't dwell on the fact that the guy failed five times and went broke. The thing I'll tell you, and this is part of why this one hits home with me, I'm here to tell you that past failures have nothing to do with what you're worthy or your worthiness. I lost everything I had in 1995. And I always think about it around Christmas time. You know why I think about it around Christmas time? Because when your heart, like when you're short on money and you're not getting results and you have small children, you start thinking about all your sins and you start thinking about how, damn, man, you know, maybe I suck as a dad because, you know, I can't afford to buy this kid presents. I'll never forget, seriously, back in 95, right before I lost everything. Actually, it was right after I lost everything. My son, Paul, who's now 27, he was just coming up on a year old. And I'll never forget, it was going to be, you know, it was his first Christmas, and I felt like such a failure. I really did, man. I barely had enough money to buy him anything, and I'll never forget, one of the things I was able to buy him was like, it was either like these little, like, you know, almost like toy soldiers, right? It was either toy soldiers or I think it was like little like astronauts and a spaceship and stuff like that. And I remembered, so that it would look like more that I got him, I took it out of the package and set them all up for him, because it was like that and maybe another gift. But, you know, and it's amazing, these things we put on ourselves, like somehow that's going to be the thing that makes me a shitty father, right? But you see, he doesn't remember that. He doesn't remember that whole thing. You know what he remembers? He remembers the fact that I've been there for him his whole life. And, you know, all the talks that we had throughout his life, and, you know, all the fun times at the house. When he went to college, I'd go and pick him up and drive, you know, 3 hours, 3.5 hours up to Albany. And we'd have these wonderful car rides together where we were catching up and laughing and stuff. And, you know, that's what people tend to remember. But anyway, you know, we're talking about rejection and stuff. And, you know, I just simply wanted to tell you, man, I lost everything. And my next chapter after that has been my best chapter. If you had asked me at the time when I lost everything and I was 60, 65 grand in debt and had both the cars repoed, I would have told you I was a grade A piece of shit and I didn't deserve anything. And that was a bad belief system, right? I had to change that. And I used to think in my belief system then was that, you know, maybe someday this will inspire somebody when I tell it, right? And I don't know, maybe I'm inspiring some of you right now. Here's one for you. This might be inspiring. Google was actually rejected by Yahoo back in the day when they had this concept of the search engine. They pitched it to Yahoo and they were rejected by Yahoo. Now, just for the hell of it, because I just can't let things go, I got to beat up the point. I did some quick research today, November 28th, 2021, and I had to look up the stock price of Yahoo. And the stock price of Yahoo, which has a different name now, by the way, is $208, right? $208. Google, if you want to guess, I can't hear you. You'll be talking to your speakers and you'll look like a jackass and probably get random drug tested today. But if you want to guess in silence, go ahead. But if you're ready, the Google stock price right now is $2,843. $2,843, right? So that's pretty crazy, right? More than 10 times the value of the very company that rejected them. Now, I told you, I can't let shit go. If I were like part of that group, right? Those two guys that started Google, and I got rejected by Yahoo, and I looked at my damn stock was $2,843 next to your shitty $208, I'd have to cut that out of the paper, right? Or whatever, or take a screenshot and then, you know, put a little thing, you, $208, and then me, $2,843, with a little stick finger figure of me giving you the finger, like, yeah, dickhead, right? That would be me. I couldn't let it go. But moving along, chicken soup for the soul, right? They were rejected 140 times. Right now, that franchise, the sales have exceeded over $2 billion. And when I was doing a little research for this podcast today, I understand that that franchise generates $100 million a year. KFC, the founder, Colonel Sanders, with his really cool white suit, which I think was a bit of a stretch even back in the day when he wore it. Kind of looked like Santa Claus in the summertime, but whatever. He was rejected over 1,000 times, and he stuck with it. And next thing you know, probably about 40 pounds that I have to lose has come from KFC. Interesting thing about Babe Ruth, right? We always kind of look back and you know, if you're a sports fan, you know, like the original home run king or whatever it is. But a lot of people don't talk about two things. Number one, he struck out, I think it was like 1,330 times or something like that, and held the record for, you know, a player who struck out the most times for like, I think it was like 27 years or something like that, only to be beaten by Mickey Mantle, like I think it was like 25 or 27 years later. I have to say something interesting. You know what I heard about Babe Ruth? I think this is interesting because everybody always talks about the Babe Ruth story and all that as, you know, as a story for us sticking with it. And, you know, how history talks about the good shit instead of the bad shit. And yeah, it's true. A little overplayed, but the very interesting thing I heard about how he struck out and what happened. You got to realize this guy was the shit back then. And people were coming to see this guy point out to left field or, you know, to a kid all the way out, you know, in the stands and belt the shit out of that ball and it's out of there, right? It's out of here. And, you know, many times he struck out. Now, he wasn't an overly fit guy, man. This guy was pretty heavy. And this guy would swing so hard many times that he would fall down. Now, I need to tell you something. Somebody's got to say this, right? But, you know, people tend to laugh when somebody who might be a little fat falls down. And you know, I don't want you to think I'm cruel. I'm fat, and I laugh at other fat people when they fall down. I expect them to laugh at me, but, you know, people were laughing at this guy. But not only were they laughing at him when he would strike out and fall on his face or fall on his ass, man. They would throw shit and stuff, and they would boo him off the field. But you see, history really doesn't focus on that part of the story. It focuses on the fact that he had this incredible home run, you know, record, right? So it's just very interesting how things get rewritten. The other one, and then I'm going to wrap it up a little bit, because I just want to beat up this point about rejection. Because I think some of you guys listening to this, you've had a tough spell. I get it. You know, some of it might go back to the early phases of the pandemic. There's many of you have lost jobs, and maybe you're on your second or third job since the pandemic began, and you're starting to question again: Am I worthy for this? Do I suck or whatever? And I just think it's not the right belief system for you to have. Interesting thing about the Beatles, and I've been thinking about the Beatles a lot for a lot of reasons. We're coming up on the anniversary of when John Lennon was killed, right? It'll be coming up in December. By the way, just a side note, that was the day I decided I was going to play guitar. Seriously, 41 years ago, I guess it was. So just an interesting little thing. But also on Disney Plus, they've had a really interesting special on the Beatles called Get Back. And I've been thinking a lot about them and everything. And I was a big fan many years ago and still am. But the Beatles were actually rejected by Decca Records. And they also said something silly back then. This is like, I don't know if it was 61, 62, somewhere around there, maybe 63. And they said something in the rejection letter like, you know, guitar music is on the way out, right? And for those of us metalheads and everything else, we're like, what are you kidding me? Guitar music is on the way out? But listen to this. The Beatles were rejected by Decca. And actually, the Beatles, a lot of people don't realize this, they actually sold more albums than Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones combined. A lot of people don't realize that. And one other little thing in case, because they say money talks and bullshit walks. Paul McCartney, who was part of that group of people who got rejected initially by Decca, is worth over $1.2 billion today and still makes money off of the Beatles franchise and Apple Records and things like that. So it's just something that I wanted you to think about or whatever. So I have a suggestion for you, right? I mean, to keep me from going on and on and on, I really want you to think about your beliefs. I want you to think about your beliefs and, you know, why you do something or maybe why you won't do something. Why don't you focus on that? Why you do a particular thing, or why you won't do a particular thing. Ask your ego to leave the room. That's the best thing in the world you could ever do when you're doing these exercises, because like I told you, the ego is going to have you believe that, yeah, this is a bullshit exercise. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about, this nut. Yeah, tell him to stick to podcasting. What does he know, right? He knows dick about this. Your ego is going to have you believe that you don't have to improve anything. You know why your ego will get in the way? Because it's a lot easier to blow off a silly exercise than actually sit there and have a hard discussion with yourself, right? A hard thought process, or, you know, ask the hard, tough questions or whatever. But I want you to look at the beliefs, again, your beliefs that you have towards why you will do something versus why you won't do something. And then ask yourself, you ready? This is the money part. Get ready, folks. 3, 2, 1. Ask yourself if that belief is serving you or if it's causing you to leave money on the table. And then, you know what? Adjust accordingly. That's it. First step is awareness. Then start adjusting accordingly. So before you go, I just want to remind you that our sales program, our brand spanking new one, is up and running, and we're starting to get people into the program for 2022. And what's interesting about this program, if I do say so myself, is that it combines courses with one-on-one training. And one of the many benefits of the program, and this is one I haven't talked too much about, is that you get complete access to my on-demand library. Now, in that on-demand library, I'm not talking about the one that's on the website, by the way, because I haven't updated that in over a year. And I usually do like 2 new webinars a month. I usually do in the neighborhood of about 2 to 3 full-on courses a year. So you have access right now to over 30, 35 titles, right? Complete access to it. And you also get the benefit of having somebody who's going to hold you accountable and customize the experience for you. Because when you and I are talking as part of the program, you can't hide in the classroom. It's just going to be me and you. And I think some of us need that. We need that accountability. And kind of getting back to the whole idea of beliefs, right? That whole belief system that we have. I think that it's important that you have somebody that's willing to challenge your beliefs from a loving perspective, not from a perspective of being a dick. And that kind of, you know, brings us to the final thing in a way about belief system and this course. You know, there's many of you who you don't believe in investing in yourself. And I don't just say this, by the way, because I sell this stuff for a living. I've been on this soapbox long before I had a sales training company. Seriously, I did. And here's why. Because one of the things I did to pull myself out of a really dark place years ago when I lost everything, remember that story I was telling before? Was I said, you know what? Every time I get a commission check, somehow, I don't care if it's only a few dollars, I'm going on a monthly basis to reinvest in myself. You know, sometimes it was the clothes that I was wearing, right? I needed to get better clothes or whatever. Other times, you know, I'm going to get a good bag, right? So that I make a good impression. It might have been a pen. You know, I remember before, like, kind of iPhones and stuff, I invested in a digital recorder, right? It wasn't expensive. You know, this way, when I'm out in the field, I get ideas. I can kind of jot down ideas. I used to also drive around different industrial parks and just kind of jot down the name of businesses I wanted to call when I got back to the office or whatever. But I also invested in webinars and in subscriptions and things like that. I really did. But here's the funny thing about beliefs. And I want to just point this out to you in the same spirit that I pointed other things out to you today. It's funny because there's a lot of people who won't invest in themselves but they invest in their 401k, right? But so in other words, it's okay to invest in strange companies, but it's not okay to invest in yourself. Or if you're like me, you invest in a, you know, $5 plus a day Starbucks habit, which, you know, I don't get that. Like, you know, hey, I'm running short on money. Yeah, but, you know, you got $25 a week in Starbucks. Like, how's that working out for you, right? So if you'd like to learn more about this program, and you know what? If, you know, if you're at the point where you realize that, you know what? If I want different results, maybe it's time to try something different, right? There's a new belief system. If you want different results, try something different. Well, then I would urge you to go to yoursalesplaybook.com/get-started. yoursalesplaybook.com/get-started. All one word, all lowercase letters with that. I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Come and check out our blog by visiting yoursalesplaybook.com/blog.